Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
World Series Game 1, 8:08 Eastern in Houston. The Nats and the amazing Astros, who are trying to carve out a little dynasty here, and they've got the pieces to do it. Obviously, you've got to keep everybody in place and stay healthy, and you know, a lot of obstacles to get there before you get to the dynastic level, but they're certainly laying the foundation. And to talk about the World Series, bounce around a little bit, one of the broadcasting legends, the great Bob Costas, who is with us here on Tiki and Tierney. This guy's had a career that, if you go to college and you study broadcasting, if you accomplish 10% of what this guy's accomplished, you've had a hell of a career. Bob, Tiki and Tierney, how are you today?
Hey, Brandon. Thank you very much for the nice introduction. Tiki, how are you?
I am fantastic, Bob, my friend, former colleague at NBC.
Yep.
And you've done it all, Bob, and it's amazing, from football to baseball, and your knowledge of the game is intense, and that's why it's so interesting to talk to you at this point. But I wonder, like, when we look at this series, this World Series matchup, and the history of the non-history of a Washington-based team versus this recent history, which was built with, you know, metrics and a farm system in Houston. It's this weird, interesting clash, and I wonder if there's a rooting favorite for the for the guy with no dog in the fight. You know what I mean? So it's like, who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy? We always try to pit these things against one another, but I don't really see it in this matchup. I wonder if you see it differently.
Yeah, it's hard to identify a bad guy or somebody who you think is the evil empire, the way the Red Sox once labeled the Yankees. The Astros have gotten there through smarts. Jeff Lunau has pulled together all of kind of the new age thinking in the most effective way. And he's got a tremendous manager in A.J. Hinch. And he's not just a guy buried in the analytics. He understands all of it. But his relationship with his players, the clubhouse chemistry, sometimes he'll go with his gut. And Lunau and the guys upstairs are okay with that because Hinch feels the game on the field. And then, just as important, Jim Crane, their owner, is willing to bend their budget a little bit. When they come to him and say, hey, look, we can get Verlander. Can we make the deal? Or we can get Cole, he'll only be here maybe for a couple of years, we lose him in free agency, but we need him. And even though we appear stacked and we're on our way to a 100-win season, we need a third ace. And they go out and get Zach Greinke, who isn't cheap. So that's a real good combination. The owner, the front office, and the guy in the dugout, not to mention the players on the field, they are a nearly perfect team. You have to look very hard to find anything that even approaches a weakness when you talk about the Astros.
No, you're right. And Jose Altuve, who was their hero, I guess you call him the hero, hitting the home run against Chapman.
I would say a walk-off home run that sends you to the World Series.
But
that's probably a little hero label.
Not really
label.
A hero yet, because they haven't won it yet, even though he is a big part of the two that they've already won. BT mentioned somewhat of a dynasty with this Astros squad. They've won two out of the last three, and they feel that way. And it's because of guys like Verlander, who we felt like he was done in Detroit. He comes to Houston, and now all of a sudden his spin rate is increasing. Just an inside baseball thing. How does moving locations change you, especially as an aged pitcher, into someone who's one of the top, maybe even Cy Young candidates this season at 30, what is it? What is he, 37?
36, I think.
36 years old. How does that happen?
But, you know, it's also happened with lesser lights. Some of their middle relievers, guys like that, guys at the back end, guys who've been closers for them. Everybody, if healthy, seems to take an uptick when they get to be part of the Astros pitching staff. And I think some of that is analytics, if you're open to it, and more modern pitchers and players in general, but pitchers in particular, are open to it. They study it. They take it seriously. So they're going to provide you with all that information. And then here's a blending of new school with old. Their pitching coach is Brent Strom, who's 70 years old. But apparently he's able to spot subtle things that are beyond my particular hardcore baseball knowledge, because I never played at anything close to that level. But he's able to spot little things, the slightest thing in the arm angle, or where you're holding the ball out of the set. Whatever it is, he's able to take guys who are already good and further fine-tune them. And some guys who were just middling are able to really blossom with the Astros. So I think, again, it's a combination of new age and old school that works so perfectly for them.
We're talking to Bob Costas, and obviously Bob is just one of the great broadcasting treasures of our lifetime, of anybody's lifetime. I know you're humble, but you truly are that. And Bob is
Thank
with
you.
Us. You're welcome. Bob is with us here on the show. You know, even though I was born in the 70s, I do have a great affinity for the sport of baseball, and I take a little bit of pride in knowing what came before me. So while I was maybe crawling around during the Big Red Machine or crawling around, you know, and just learning maybe what baseball was about when the Yankees were going back-to-back in the late 70s, I've always looked at the 70s, Bob, as the best baseball decade. You had the A's before that, back-to-back-to-back. I mean, the Charlie Finley A's, terrific. The Astros, to me, they've got an old-school grit. Like, you know, they've got an old-school mentality. Bregman is a throwback dirtbag, and I say that affectionately. Is there a team that everybody would know, associate with as a dynasty, that you think the Astros kind of feel like a great team from the past?
I don't think there's an exact comp there, but they remind me a little bit of the best of Joe Torre's teams in that they have a little bit of all the things you need to succeed. They don't have Mariano Rivera,
yeah,
who's a constant throughout all of it. It's very rare for a reliever to stay at that kind of level for more than a decade, and he did. And so he was always the sure thing out of the Yankee bullpen. That was a constant, and no other team that I can think of had that for such a long period of time. But the Yankee teams, the best teams in that stretch, were so resourceful, and they had a little bit of everything that you need to win. The teams that you mentioned, though, I think is a very important point. And they were preceded by the Baltimore Orioles, 69-70-71. Even though they lost two of the three World Series, they go 69-70-71. Then the A's go 72-73-74 and win them all. And then the Reds win back-to-back 75-76. And then the Yankees win back-to-back 77-78. But it's only that Yankee team that experiences the first tastes of free agency. Those other teams were able to hold their core together without worrying about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got to figure out not just what to do in-game, but there's a game that takes place during the offseason and even during the season where you're trying to figure out long-range projections. Gee, if we sign this guy, he'll cost this, and we won't be able to keep that guy or attract that guy. It used to be checkers. Now it's chess.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it's crazy. The one team that we omitted from the 70s was one of the most unique teams of all time, too. How about the We Are Family, the 79 Pirates, right?
Yeah, right at the tail end.
Yeah.
Down 3-1 to the Orioles. And led by Willie Stargell, they come back and win it.
Yeah.
And win the last two in Baltimore.
Oh, man. You know, so I believe we have this right. Your first professional job was with the St. Louis Spirit. Was it number one or number two?
Number two. Number one, you could hardly call it professional because they paid $30 a game.
Oh, wow.
And $5 a day meal money on the road,
uh-huh,
to do games in the old Eastern Hockey League.
Wow. Okay.
Blazers.
That's amazing. And
that was the Paul Newman Slapshot League. Just a few years later, the movie comes out.
Yeah.
I did the games in the 73-74 season when I was a senior at Syracuse. And I think Slapshot came out in 77.
77,
like
I think. Yeah.
And I knew a lot of guys who were extras in the movie because they shot it in Johnstown.
Cool.
And the Johnstown Jets were one of the teams in the league. So that was the first job.
Okay.
And then right after that, I did the Spirits of St. Louis of the ABA.
Okay, and we've all seen great documentaries on the ABA, and it was a very interesting time. Just, you know, the disco era, you know, mm-hmm, drug use was very prominent. Cocaine was bursting on the scene. There was all sorts of funky music as rock and the transition to the disco. Studio 54, 70s were wild, I guess is what I'm saying. When you were doing the ABA games, could you ever imagine that basketball, whether it was the ABA or the NBA, would morph into this?
No, although I had an appreciation of the ABA that a lot of people, I'd say most basketball fans at that time, didn't, because the ABA only had a patchy national television contract. Maybe some of their games were syndicated deep in the playoffs,
mm-hmm,
but during the regular season, there were no national telecasts of games. And the NBA was not nearly as popular as it would ultimately become. But when you think about it, they adopted the three-point shot.
Yes.
They adopted the slam dunk contest.
Mm-hmm.
And the first year after the merger, 10 of the 24 players in the All-Star game had played in the ABA, and half of the 10 starters in the NBA Finals between the 76ers and the Trailblazers had played the year before in the ABA.
Wow.
Cardell Jones, George McGinnis, and, of course, Dr. J for the 76ers, and Dave Twardzik, a little guard, and Maurice Lucas, a very important player, power forward for the Trailblazers. So that was a testament to the quality of the ABA and the kind of freewheeling, wide-open thing. That was an injection of excitement and improvisation and a jazz kind of quality that helped the NBA.
Yeah.
And then, of course, shortly after that, along come Magic and Bird, and then here comes Jordan, and the whole thing explodes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Nobody ever doubted
the timeline,
the viability of the ABA in terms of talent, but the way you just illuminated how many great players, like I didn't know it was quite that. That crossover was quite that palpable. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, you know, Bob, before we let you go, let's jump back into the World Series. The Nationals are a team that a lot of people aren't going to give a shot, right? They swept through the NL Championship Series, and their pitching staff looked amazing, from Strasburg to Corbin to Scherzer. It's like they were each trying to outdo one another, and Sean Doolittle is their closer. Like, their staff gives them credence, and they got a couple of bangers as well. Do you give them a shot against what a lot of people are saying is a dynastic Astros squad?
Absolutely, I give them a shot. A, because any team has at least a shot. Any team good enough to make the playoffs has at least a shot in the best of seven. But in this case, this is an old-school, true starting pitching matchup. You know, you used to say, hey, it's Tom Seaver against Juan Marichal.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's Steve Carlton against Bob Gibson or something like that. Now you've got that. You've got Max Scherzer against Garrett Cole, followed by Steven Strasburg against Justin Verlander, followed by Patrick Corbin against Zach Greinke. We might not see, I don't know if they haven't checked the rosters, they may have reactivated Wade Miley for the World Series, we'll see. He could start game four for the Astros, even though he had a rough September after having a pretty good regular season. But that might be the only game Anibal Sanchez would start that for the Nats. He's their fourth best starter. The Astros could conceivably go with a, quote, bullpen game in game four. But that would be the only possible matchup where it wasn't somebody who was an ace or very close to an ace going against someone else of that same quality. And if you're going to have those kinds of games, and we've had low-scoring games after a year of offensive explosion, we've had low-scoring games in this postseason by and large, if you're going to have some 3-2 and 2-1 games, who's to say the Nats can't steal one of the first two in Houston? They come back home. You know, I'd certainly give them a chance. Anthony Rendon, Juan Soto.
Oh, yeah.
Great. You know what they have? Here's what they have. The one edge they have over the Astros, the one clear-cut edge they have, because each team has a quality lineup, and the Astros probably have a top-to-bottom edge there, and each team is loaded with starting pitching. But where I give the Nats an edge is in team speed, led by Trey Turner.
Yeah.
Their shortstop.
Oh, yeah.
And if you get in a game, late in a game, where you have to play small ball, which almost no team does anymore in a homer-happy era, but in a pitching-dominated series, you get into a game where a stolen base or a sacrifice or a speedy guy who can score from first on a double, that makes a big difference.
Hey, listen, it's October, so hearing Bob Costas' voice, it just syncs up with the month. You sound great, man. It's an absolute honor. Thanks for hopping on, Bob. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brandon. Take care, Tiki.
Be good. Take care, Bob.
There you go.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.